Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Well, we might have a looming government shutdown, which always appears to be looming in Washington these days. We're going to talk about it. Scott, good to have you here.
Thanks, Loman. Great to be back.
Once again, we've had a situation, Scott, where rather than pass a budget, Congress has kicked the can down the road with these continuing resolutions, the deadline of the latest of which is approaching. Any sign at this point that there might be a resolution, or are we headed for a partial government shutdown?
That's a great question. It's probably the multi-million dollar question on K Street among all these people that are trying to get their anomalies stuffed into the next spending deal. And so how did we get to where we are? Well, you might remember that President Biden signed a continuing resolution back in January to avoid a shutdown. And there was this laddered approach is the way that they describe it. So the first set of appropriation bills are going to expire on Friday, March 1st. And the second set will expire a week later on March 8th. Nonetheless, that could result in what's known as a partial government shutdown, where essential services continue, but unessential, non-essential personnel are furloughed, and you get all this drama in Washington, D.C., and crisis legislating. And we know from previous votes that things are very, very tight. And Speaker Johnson, I think, is taking in information, socializing what the options are with his House Republican Conference. They had a retreat recently down in Florida and went over a lot of these big questions. How are they going to wrap up 2024? How are they going to ensure that they grow their House Republican majority? And how are they going to help Donald Trump win the presidential race? And so I think the most likely outcome here is that we do have some sort of an extension to the continuing resolution, not an omnibus appropriations, but an extension of current levels that probably take us closer to September 30th than not. The Washington special interest groups, the establishment, they want to see that omnibus appropriation. They want to see all the foreign aid for Ukraine and other countries stuffed in there as a policy rider and as an anomaly. But I do think that Washington is broken when it comes to the federal appropriations process. We know that we've got an outrageous amount of federal spending when it comes to the overall defense budget and the non-defense federal funding, from being over $700 billion for the non-defense side and over $880 billion for defense. And that's just not sustainable, right? I know it sounds like these big numbers. What exactly does that mean, right? I think the way that people typically judge our federal budget is on the overall deficit, which is over $200 billion every single month. And it's also judged on what the inflationary pressures are felt like with the deficit spending. And as we continue to spiral toward $35 trillion of a national debt. So it's something to watch here. I would expect this to be the top conversation in Washington, D.C. among House, Senate, and White House negotiators over the next week or so.
And as they're talking about wrapping up 2024, Scott, we're seeing what appears to be somewhat of an unusual number of high-profile Republicans opting for retirement rather than running for re-election this year. What is behind this exodus?
Well, listen, I think that you always see a large number of folks retire, but what's interesting about this time, it reminds me actually of 2018 when we had a bunch of House Republican chairmen that decided to hit the road. And this time we've got Chairman of the Homeland Security Committee, Mark Green. We've got Chairman of House Financial Services, Patrick McHenry. You've got the chairwoman of Energy and Commerce, Kathy McMorris Rodgers. You've got many, many other senior House Republicans that just aren't finding the productivity and the value in the work the same way, given the gridlock and the tension that I think exists in Washington. So that's part of it. But if anything, you know what it actually does is it creates a real opportunity for new ideas, new leadership, new voices to come to the table and serve in important positions. We're obviously optimistic that we can get some of the club-back candidates into those roles. We've got a lot of strong people. And it also goes back to this idea of term limits, right? We don't want people to be serving in Washington for 30 years. We want them to come to Washington, D.C., have a productive experience, and then return to their community where they can continue to serve in a high level.
One of the more interesting parlor games that's taking place in political circles these days focuses on who is going to be Donald Trump's running mate as we go through the presidential primary process, wrap it up, and head to the nomination convention. Obviously, the president needs a new running mate because Mike Pence is clearly off the table. What's the latest scuttlebutt on that?
Recently, Donald Trump did a Fox News town hall event hosted by Laura Ingraham. And she asked him about his potential choice for vice presidential running mate. She asked about Ron DeSantis and Tim Scott and Vivek Ramaswamy, Byron Donald, South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem, and former Hawaii Representative Tulsi Gabbard. And in this instance, she basically said, you know, are all these folks on your shortlist, Mr. President? And he said, yes, they're all great. They're all solid. I'm considering all of them. It obviously doesn't limit the list to these six. I think that there's a real question on whether Ron DeSantis and Byron Donalds would actually be considered for the vice presidential slot, not because of any tensions. I think that they're both incredible leaders. And obviously, Byron is a rising star in the House Republican Conference. But you got the big question here related to the Constitution that says that the vice presidential nominee can't be from the same state as the presidential nominee unless they're willing to forego all of the electoral votes in that state. And you may recall, back in 2000, Dick Cheney relocated from Texas to Wyoming in order to be George W. Bush's running mate. And in this instance, Ron DeSantis and Byron Donalds aren't independently wealthy, so I don't really see them leaving Florida. And I'm also very skeptical that Donald Trump would leave Mar-a-Lago and reestablish his residency elsewhere, whether that be Bedminster in New Jersey or somewhere else. So I think that it even narrows the list down more. Obviously, I've got my own opinion on who might be missing out of the six that Laura Ingraham decided to throw out there. But nonetheless, the vice presidential sweepstakes are starting to heat up a little bit here as Donald Trump clearly is going to be the Republican nominee. And I will make a bold prediction here today. I think that there is a 0% chance that Nikki Haley is going to be selected as a running mate.
We have been talking with Scott Parkinson from the Club for Growth. And Scott, a few words about the club.
Well, Club for Growth is based out of Washington, D.C., and its members are united in the idea of economic freedom and liberty and opportunity. Club allows you to sign up for free and become a member at www.clubforgrowth.org. And you can also follow Club on X at Club for Growth with the number 4.
Scott Parkinson at the Club for Growth. Scott, thank you for being here.
All right. Thank you.